Welcome to Vital Voices. Our guest today, Jill Sossman, makes dried apple stack cakes, a procedure she learned from her grandmother, Nevada Parker Durting, in Scott County, Virginia. Making a dried apple stack cake takes time and patience, and in this case, a respect for the traditions of the past. The dried apple stack cake recipe Jill uses is well over 125 years old. First of all, for someone who has never seen a dried apple stack cake, or who has never tasted a dried apple stack cake, describe what it looks like and what it tastes like.
Well, it usually consists of anywhere from 5 to 7 layers, and the 7 layers kind of have a biblical reference, but sometimes my grandmother would make 5 layers, and then she would save the dough from the other 2 layers and make little mini stack cakes. But it does have 7 layers, each about 1/2 inch thick, and in between those layers, you cook dried apples into a sauce and put them in between the layers. So the cake itself ends up being approximately 4 to 5 inches tall.
How far back in your family does the recipe go?
Well, I know my grandmother probably made it in the early 1900s. She was born in 1892, so I would say she, by the time she was 10 years old, 15 years old, she was helping her mother make them. And then, of course, she continued to make them by the time she got married and made them until the end of her life in 1970s.
We can tell listeners at the end of the program where to find this particular dried apple stack cake recipe. But tell us generally what goes into the dried apple stack cake, and maybe just as important, what does not go into a dried apple stack cake, at least your family's version of the dried apple stack cake.
Okay. Molasses was a main ingredient. In fact, my grandmother called it a molasses fruit cake, or molassy, as she would say, molassy cake. And so they were the main ingredient in the cake, where you could actually taste them. The dried apples, she usually used wine sap apples. She grew her own apples, and you want a tart apple to go in the cakes in order to get the best flavor. Most of the cake recipes that you see now have spices in them, like cinnamon, cloves, nutmeg, and so forth, either in the cake or in the cooked apples. My grandmother did not use those spices because in the Appalachian Mountains they were hard to come by, and especially during the Depression. So therefore, she made the cake without those, and the two basic flavors that come through in the cake are the molasses or sorghum, since sorghum cane was actually what was grown in this area rather than molasses, but we called it molasses, and then the apples themselves.
Tell us how your grandmother dried her apples in Scott County, Virginia, and also why it's important when you're making this cake to avoid the kinds of dried apples that you would typically find in a grocery store.
She sliced the apples and dried them in the sun. And when you do that, you get a deeper color in the apples when they're cooked than you do even with using dehydrators today. In the store, when you purchase dried apples in the little packets that they have, preservatives are used to keep them from turning that dark color. And it's the dark, rich color that I think gives it better flavor, and it's much prettier when you put the cake together because it is darker in color, and you can distinguish the layers that much better.
Were these cakes typically made in the fall, or were they made year-round?
My grandmother made them year-round, but she probably made more in the fall because apples were plentiful at that time, and around the holidays, Thanksgiving and Christmas.
This is obviously not quickie cooking. Explain how long it takes to put one of these cakes together.
I would say you need a good afternoon or a good morning, 4 to 5 hours, depending on how quick you are as far as rolling out the dough. You need to roll out 7 individual layers of cake and bake them individually. And they don't take long to bake since you're rolling them thin to look almost the consistency of cookie dough, like a cookie. So when they bake, by the time they rise, they're only about a half an inch thick. But that's the time. That's what takes the most time. However, you do have to cook the apples, and you want to cook them down slowly, like I said, to the consistency of apple butter. If you don't have a ricer or a Foley food mill to make them into a smooth sauce, you can just mash them up and use them that way.
We've talked about baking procedure, and there's an eating procedure with this cake as well. Some cakes you may eat right out of the oven, and this certainly is not one of them. It's a cake that needs to season or cure for a few days. Explain that, and the fact that in your family there were people who got into trouble, actually, for cutting into the cake before that seasoning period was over.
Well, that was a contention of my grandmother. You never ate the cake before it had time to sit in a cool, dry place for about 2 days, preferably three. The cake consistency when it comes out of the oven is not exactly crisp, but kind of dry and hard, like a cookie would be. And when you put the sauce between the cake layers, it absorbs the sauce over a period of days, and therefore the cake is much moister and much tastier if you allow it to do that. Now, my uncle and aunt, she baked a cake for them one time, and they couldn't wait to get into it. And they got into it before that two to three day period ended, and my grandmother found it out, and she was so upset that rather than give them the cake on the day that she made it, she kept the cake for 2 to 3 days before she would give it to them again.
About the only adornment on this cake is the scalloped edge. How do you achieve that?
My grandmother had a pie pan that had scalloped edges. It was an old tin pie pan, and she would use that to cut them out. You can use a cake pan, an 8 or 9 inch round cake pan, and cut them out. But she thought the decorative edge made it a little prettier. Of course, you prick each layer with a fork to keep the layers from rising, and then you sprinkle each layer as you bake it with sugar, saving the prettiest layer for the very top of the cake.
We're talking with Jill Sossman about a true Appalachian delight, the dried apple stack cake. At the end of the program, we'll tell you how to access the recipe for this cake online. Although I didn't know your grandmother personally, she had died before we met. I understand that oftentimes she would bake the layers of this cake using a black iron skillet.
Sometimes she would bake them in black iron skillet. She would turn the skillet actually sometimes upside down and use the bottom of the skillet actually to bake the cake. Of course, you have to watch it very carefully because the iron skillets hold heat in and you don't want the cake layers to burn. And that was just so she could find an extra pan or something to use in order to get the layers baked quicker than just one layer at a time.
Now, this is home cooking. Have you ever found this dried apple stack cake in a restaurant?
I've never seen it in a restaurant. This is something that's mostly a Appalachian Mountain South recipe. I mean, there are other variations in other parts of the country, but it's something that is so time consuming that you don't find it in restaurants. A lot of people, it's kind of become a forgotten dessert, but some say it got started when a couple got married, people were so poor they couldn't afford to bake a wedding cake that each family could afford one layer of a cake. And they made, all the families that came to the wedding brought the layers and put them together using apple butter, applesauce, dried apples, and as it is in our case, in particular, to form that cake, and therefore they had the wedding cake. I've never really heard any other story as to how it got started, but it was always ingredients that were readily available to a farmer or to the Mountain South people.
How does this cake represent the Appalachian people and the Appalachian region. I know we've said many times, quoting Joe Dabney, that the dried apple stack cake is the most mountain of desserts. Explain that quotation and what it represents for Appalachian culture to you.
Well, you always typically had flour on hand. Sorghum was usually made in the fall. Most of the people grew their own cane, sorghum cane, and made sorghum or molasses, as we called it. And you usually had chickens. You had an egg available. And most people always grew their own apples. So you had apples, and they dried apples every year to preserve, to use over the wintertime. So it was always ingredients that you had on hand. You didn't have to go out and find extra ingredients anywhere. Of course, buttermilk goes in the recipe, so that was usually available too. Sour milk, clabbered milk, whatever. Most of the people had their own dairies or cows, so it's ingredients that were readily available.
Of all the grandchildren in your family, you are the only one who makes this cake, who keeps it going. Why is that, and why is it important to you to perpetuate this recipe?
I didn't realize this when I was a child of five into my teens, but I spent a lot of time at my grandmother's house. She lived just across the road from me, and I would come in from school and head over to Grandma's. And I did not realize, but I was learning. She was always baking, and I was right by her side asking questions, watching, and not realizing what I was picking up at the time. Of course, the thing that was in it for me at the time is she would always give me some of the dough. And even when I wasn't there, if I was at school and she made a cake, she would put some dough back in the refrigerator and keep it for me until I got home. But it was actually a learning process for me. And I realized that I was the only grandchild there that saw the technique and saw just how she did it. I can see her with her bowl of flour, making a well and putting all the ingredients and mixing it up with hands, incorporating just enough flour to make the dough the consistency of stiff cookie dough. And I can see her rolling it out and cutting it out. I saw how she did everything. And it's amazing that all comes back to me now, but I didn't realize that I was learning. She was teaching me something at that time.
How was the cake served? Was it always served at the end of the meal? And was anything served with it?
Most of the time it was served at the end of the meal. And my grandmother, to make it go farther, would only slice really thin pieces. You can get a lot of pieces out of this apple stack cake if you do slice it thin. And she sliced it thin as though a fruit cake would be sliced. Of course, you could have extra pieces, but normally she would slice anywhere from a half inch to an inch thick slice. And, of course, we would go and sneak slices of cake in between meals.
Let's talk about the flour that you use to make a dried apple stack cake. Of course, White Lily flour was made in Knoxville, Tennessee for generations. Consequently, people in this area loved it and still do, although it's made outside the South now. Why is a flour like White Lily, a cake flour, for example, especially important when you make the dried apple stack cake?
My grandmother, when baking, always used White Lily all-purpose flour. I never knew her to use anything else, and I never knew my mother to use anything else. White Lily is a soft red winter wheat flour, and it has a lighter texture than your other regular all-purpose flours like Gold Medal, Pillsbury, whatever. And she liked it because it made things a lot lighter in taste, and especially her biscuits. They were lighter and fluffier if she used White Lily. So when she made her dried apple stack cake, she used White Lily too. And when you're using it, as far as following any recipe, you would have to use more because it weighs less than other all-purpose flours. some people make the stack cake, and they would come back and tell me that they couldn't incorporate all the flour in the cake. And so I said, well, just add a little bit more buttermilk or moisture to it, and you should be fine. But then when I studied it, I thought, oh, goodness, they probably are using something else besides white lily. And so when I did the recipe or had to put the proportions are made for white lily flour. And if you use other flours, you've got to use less flour to be able to incorporate all the flour in the cake.
Talk about how your grandmother would be shocked and surprised at how far this recipe has traveled.
Well, my grandmother was always known as the dried apple stack cake queen of Hilton's. She would always make a cake for somebody's birthday, for a special occasion, and especially, of course, in the fall when apples were prolific in the area. Everybody usually had their own apple tree. But she never probably ever considered the fact that one of her grandchildren would carry on the tradition and it would become so popular, especially put in all kinds of cookbooks. And she would be so surprised that it was included in multiple cookbooks and magazine articles, and it was even mentioned in the Oxford Companion to Sugar and Sweets. So she would be thrilled to know that her recipe, which was probably carried on from her mother, would be so popular these days. And I've carried on that tradition for future generations.
We've been talking to Jill Sossman of Johnson City, Tennessee, originally from Scott County, Virginia, about the dried apple stack cake. It's been called the most mountain of desserts. Jill shares the recipe for this storied cake widely, and it's easily found on the internet. Just do a search for Nevada Parker Durting's Dried Apple Stack Cake. That's Nevada, spell like the state of Nevada, Parker, the middle name, and Durting, D-E-R-T-I-N-G, the last name. Nevada Parker Durting's Dried Apple Stack Cake. You'll find it on several websites, including those of Blue Ridge Country Magazine and the Tennessee State Museum. For Vital Voices, I'm Fred Sossman.